Welcome in 2026 with a bang with Whizbang Fireworks. Whizbang is a great selection of fireworks in all varieties. You can start the new year off with a fireworks celebration. Whizbang Fireworks will be open Saturday, December 27th through Wednesday, December 31st from noon to 4 p.m. on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut. Use caution with fireworks and follow local laws. Celebrate 2026 with fireworks from Whizbang Fireworks, open on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut.
Doug, hypothetically, if someone accidentally backed into a snowbank.
Bob, what did you do?
Nothing, but if a guy did, the Waring Chevrolet Body Shop could fix it, right?
Absolutely. Dings, dents, scrapes, bumps, we fix it all.
Hypothetically, how fast?
Faster than you can say Bob shouldn't park in tight spaces.
That was one time.
Folks, bring it to the pros. The Waring Chevrolet Body Shop for the unfortunate vehicle collision. 107 East Alger or online at WaringSheridan.com.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Tuesday, December 30th, and from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by Sheridan Community Land Trust Director of Conservation, John Graves, and Director of Recreation, Jared Koenig. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning.
I hope you guys had a good Christmas. Did you stay local?
Both of us, yeah.
Kind of just hung out at the house. This was one of the first years we actually didn't do a whole lot of traveling ourselves. Stayed right here, which is really odd because this would have been the best year for roads.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It was some nice weather around here.
Yeah, that's something, Jared, before I get into too much, wading into the subjects that we've got to cover, I'm just curious. You're out there talking to a lot of folks who manage land and look at ag. Are they concerned about that snowpack right now? Has that even come up?
I think we're all starting to look at it. You know, the mountains have been getting some snow, but, you know, I know we're a little shy on the snowpack right now. We get so much snow in the early springtime, and that really is what fills our reservoirs, fills our creeks, and then flows into the ditches that helps out the farmers and ranchers. So I think we're all kind of watching of, oh, what's going to happen? Maybe we're a little concerned, but we'll see what happens. You know,
A little early. Okay.
But we definitely need the snow and the moisture to start coming. You know, it was strange. We had that rain in December.
Yeah.
Here, a lot of rain. That's strange. It's odd. But you know, hopefully starting February, March, April, we'll start seeing the snow really pick up and help us out.
All right. Now, I read a report this morning. We beat all temperature records in December. Kind of blew my mind. But all right, 2025 is coming to an end. Now, John, when you look back on the past year, which land stewardship projects would you say had the biggest impact on ranch families across Sheridan County?
Boy, that's a great question. We did so much this year. It was awesome. I think probably the two biggest things that have had a major impact for landowners is our work with wildlife-friendly fencing and also wetland restoration. We're really working hard on some wetland restoration. That helps the wildlife. It helps the landowners with their livestock that are out there grazing. It just increases the overall forage that's in these wetland areas that the wildlife thrive in. You know, these cottonwood areas, it's great for the wildlife. Livestock producers use it too as they're moving their animals through the area. So that was a great project. We've done a few. We have a huge one coming up this next year on a reach of South Dry Creek. We're really excited for, and we can't wait to see those results this next summer.
Now, I was going to go into some stewardship efforts, but just touching on what you were talking about regarding wetland areas, also riparian areas, a section of land that I wasn't overly interested in until I got into the news business and realized how important these really are. When it comes to restoration of riparian areas, you guys also have a program that helps kind of bring that up, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And riparian area, for the folks out there, could you just describe what it is?
Oh, boy. how to describe that? It's basically just, it's the area where right off of a creek bank, right off of a stream bank, that gets a significant amount of moisture from the creek flowing through, natural flooding through those areas. And just, it supports a very diverse population of wildlife, everything from deer to, depending on the area, you can have beavers and turkeys and all sorts of birds. It's very critical that we protect these areas. The work we're doing prevents sediment runoff from flowing and the erosion and sediment flowing into the creek downstream, plugging up the streams, causing issues downstream. We want to keep that sediment and that habitat intact and sound where these wetland areas are for the wildlife to benefit and thrive in. So that's what our work really focuses on. It increases the water table in the area. So you'll notice several feet away from the creek, you start getting a lot more lush grasses and trees that all the wildlife and the livestock producers can benefit from.
Now, folks out there have got a creek running through the yard, and it's just on the move. They're not really benefiting from that, are they? I mean, there are ways and techniques that we can kind of slow that down so that you can get a better riparian area.
Absolutely, yep. And that's a lot of what this work looks at. No matter the size of the creek, the river, whatever it is, working to slow down that velocity of the water helps to prevent that erosion, helps to keep that water there, disperse across the natural floodplain, and help out these areas.
And it'll really improve your area, folks. As he was describing, just right around the creek area, but you'd be surprised at the amount of lush vegetation and animals that show up once that's slowed down. You want to do that, contact SCLT. Now, how did your stewardship efforts kind of balance agricultural needs with the long-term conservation goals that you guys work so hard on?
We've been doing a lot of work with various conservation projects, stewardship projects, including conservation easements. This year has been great. We closed on a new conservation easement, which we're very excited about, thanks to Don Roberts and his donation to SCLT. We also have 8 active projects. We're working with local landowners for conservation easements, and that will ensure that the land as it is today will stay that way forever. No more subdivisions, no more development on that land. We're really excited about that. We get to see the work that these landowners are going to do to improve their habitat, both for wildlife and for their ranching production that they have going on their land. So it's great to work with these additional 8 landowners right now on these conservation easements. Hopefully we can close them in the next few years and permanently protect them for everybody to enjoy the view shed.
You know, it's amazing to think that you can organize and develop and sit with SCLT and ensure that the land and the view that you're looking at right now stays that way.
Yep. That's what these landowners want. You know, they're making this private decision on their private land that they want to protect the land and keep it that way forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And we are so thankful that we get to play a role in protecting that land for them. You know, we've worked with one landowner that protected his land in a conservation easement, but then he turned around and he opened it up through the Access ES hunting program.
Oh, wow.
So it's still a private land. He still farms it and ranches it. But during the hunting season, he's opened it up to the public to enjoy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not all landowners do that, and that's not a requirement, but it's great that there's a landowner out there like that. Same thing with Don Roberts and his donation to SCLT. Jared's worked so hard on all these great trails we have up on Soldier Ridge. It's great that we have that area now, and it's going to be awesome to see what the future holds for that.
Trails are so important, and on that Access ES, Wyoming Game and Fish, something that I've spoken with them about, the upcoming symposium, you're the one who kind of brought this to me first. Even before the Game and Fish brought it to my attention, you were already knee-deep walking through this. What lessons have emerged so far from any virtual fencing pilot program that we had going on here? We had, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pulling from memory here, and we had 3 ranchers in the area running virtual fencing all on different terrain, Everyone's kind of learning something a little new. Do we have anything tangible as a result from that as of yet?
That's a great question. Virtual fencing is still so new here in the States. The three landowners that we're directly working with, they've had it going, let's call it 6 months, basically. I think what they've learned so far is that they have greatly increased the amount of available forage for their cattle to graze. And through their practices on managing the land, they have reduced the amount of overgrazing that they might do. Not to say that they've ever overgrazed, but because of using the virtual fence technology, they can better manage how much their cattle are grazing, when, where, duration, everything. And so they're already seeing returns on their investment into virtual fencing by how they're able to manage it. They're not running hot wire across their properties all over the place, all that time and labor, and they're seeing just these cattle are really enjoying constantly moving into a new pasture with fresh grass for them to eat, and it's been a great thing so far. So we're really, really looking forward to learning more about this technology. We're going to see how it holds up through the winter. So far in the early winter, everything's been good. We've had some winds, some really strong winds. As we all know, we had a couple issues, but the company we worked with was great about replacing the towers for these landowners under the warranty, free of charge, got right out, got them replaced, took care of it. So we'll see how the rest of the winter holds up, move into the next grazing season and see how the producers do with it and how they enjoy it.
What do we know about the virtual fence symposium coming up January 8th?
Yes, that'll be in Gillette. It's a large event that's being basically put on by all the regional conservation districts, TNC, Sheridan Community Land Trust, just to continue to educate people about virtual fencing, the pros, the cons. We all know everything has pros and cons, so I always like to point that out. We want to educate people. Virtual fencing is not right for everybody, but it's right for a lot of people. And so if we can get all the facts out there for people to make the decision on their own, that's our goal. We're really looking forward to it. The information is on the SCLT website, SheridanCLT.org, and you can register. I think this is the last week to register for it. We're very excited. The three companies that do virtual fencing will be there to answer all the questions. It's a full-day event, free to come. It's going to be great.
Now, what really got you so involved in this? And the reason I'm making a big deal of this, a lot of people may not realize, New York Times came out. They spoke to you about this. This is a big deal.
It is a big deal. You know, fences will never go away. I raise bison. I have huge fences. We can make our perimeter fences wildlife friendly so wildlife can come on and off people's properties. But those interior fences, I hate building fence. I built a lot of fence. It's no fun. Virtual fencing just removes that. It allows you to manage your herd in an easier way. You can sit on your horse, you can sit in your truck and manage your herd from your phone and make an impact on your land that helps you out as a producer. You know, these cattle producers work so hard, so hard. And so if we can do something to make their lives easier, save them money, cost them less money, anything about that, that's just a win-win all our way around.
You know, I've noticed embracing new technology has, and the lack of, you know, willingness to do so, has a lot to do with just not knowing enough about that technology, right? My father was well into his 60s before he got his first computer. Now the old boy takes his laptop everywhere. He's got all his livestock listed on there. He's so proud of his spreadsheets and management plans. Are you going to have any other field days dealing with virtual fencing as we roll into 2026 so that people can go out there, really kind of, maybe not a hands-on, but see it for themselves?
Yeah, this next summer, we're still working on the exact details, but we're going to have another field day. People can come out to see these ranchers that we're working with, ask them questions directly. How do you like it? How do you not like it? What's wrong with it? What's great about it? Let them see the cattle with the collars on, how it works, how to move the animals to new pastures. Look at their phone app to see. Cover all the things. You know, we want to give that education to people. We are not trying to tell people how to run their herd, their operation. We just want to give them the options and the education that they make their own decisions. And so it's really important to allow them to see hands-on, not getting a sales pitch from some company, but hearing from the ranchers directly. Yes, this is great because XYZ. That's our goal.
And as you said, it's not for everybody.
No.
In some situations, it's just not going to be a practical application of this new technology. In those cases, a lot of times, maybe we want to go with a wildlife fencing. As we talk about that, what is the difference between wildlife-friendly fencing and just a regular fence?
Primarily, it has elements in the design that allow the wildlife to pass through it more easily. Simple things such as the bottom wire being at least 12 inches off the ground, not being a barbed wire, but being a smooth wire, the top wire being high enough to keep cattle or horses or other livestock in, but allowing wildlife to jump over it with ease. Those are small changes people can make to make their fences wildlife friendly. Like I said, fences are never going to go away. We're always going to have them. But if we can modify them to allow wildlife to pass in and out while keeping animals where they're supposed to be, that's what our goal is.
Well, and we live in a major migration area, don't we?
We do. Lots of wildlife going through.
And we need to make sure that they can actually get where they're going so that they can do what they do and eventually, hopefully, land on the dinner table later on down the line.
That's right.
Now, have you seen any specific outcomes from the wildlife-friendly fencing demonstration up at the Big Goose Natural Area?
I think so. We have so much wildlife out there. It's great. I really think the deer are grazing in areas that might have been harder for them to get to in the past, which is great to see. Small changes, we got rid of a lot of woven wire. Woven wire is preventing smaller animals from crossing and getting down to the creek, such as turtles. You know, you don't think about that. Wildlife-friendly fencing for turtles. Turtles can't go through a woven wire net, but now that we have this wildlife-friendly fencing, they can pass under the wire with ease, and they can get down to the creek. So small changes like that have been big, and we've seen those changes already.
My gosh, how sad would that be? Just walking along your fence, you see a bunch of turtles who are just kind of like on their backs. They just can't get to where they want to go. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'd be heartbroken to see a turtle like that. Jared, I'm going to switch over to you real quick, my friend. You opened 117 acres, Big Goose Natural Area, to the public. We have talked about this. It's been a pretty big deal out of Sheridan Community Land Trust this year. What did it take to get to this spot?
Well, as with any land trust project that we work on, one of the primary things is community involvement. We had a lot of great folks from different organizations out there volunteering, great folks just volunteering on their own time. And they came out and they helped get the what would be the trails clear. They helped take down some of the old fencing that was not wildlife friendly. And, you know, because of that, people are able to go out there today and walk on the trails. They're able to see deer, baby deer out there that you wouldn't normally see, right? Because, you know, they couldn't get under the fence or something like that. But there's all sorts of critters and stuff out there that you can see. It's, you know, you can go out and see, you know, livestock as well, see the cows and stuff like that. And it's just a great place. And it was only because of community involvement and through partnerships with other community organizations, especially Bridges. The Bridges Foundation was a big partner with us in this.
When it comes to the work that you had to do out there to get this ready for the community, was there anything that really sticks out in your mind as like, boy, that was a big challenge, or I had to do a lot of X, Y?
Well, yeah, we, you know, it's a interesting property. It was the old NSI property. And so there was various amounts of trash and stuff out, you know, dangerous stuff out where, you know, folks are now walking and stuff like that. And we got a lot of that cleaned up. You know, there was a lot of it that was not friendly for the public to go get to. And that's part of what we cleaned up with volunteers. Part of the other is our office, you know, and the building that we moved into out there and turning that into a community space where the community can come and use that. And just, you know, just a little tiny things, 100 million little things, putting in a trail here, a path there, a gate there. And it's all been a lot of little things, but it all adds up to a great community treasure that people can come out and enjoy.
You know, I didn't even think about the cleanup that would have had to have taken place to prepare it. I thought about like trail emplacement and changing fences, things like that. Yeah, I could only imagine the amount of trash bags that yeah. were filled coming out of there.
Well, there was an old burn pit out there. We hauled old, you know, chunks of mattress and wow. furniture and stuff out of that burn pit, you know, pulled it out of the ground, get it up to the proper dump in the area.
My goodness, I had no idea it was that bad. Now, 2 miles of trails at the area. How does that fit into a broader recreational vision as you look at all the trails that you've helped to build, planned out? How does the Big Goose Natural Area fit into all of that?
Well, you know, when we were first planning this area, we took a step back to see, you know, what do we have in the area and what do we need, right? And so we didn't need just another dog park. That's why we landed on coming to a dog-friendly trail, off-leash-friendly trail. It's things like this that, you know, what do we need close to town? And that's what people kept telling us is we need an off-leash dog trail. We need
yeah.
a place to go close to town that's easy to walk with our friends and our family, kids. It's very friendly to people with mobility issues. There's not a whole lot of elevation change out there. There's not, you know, you're not hiking along a big cliff or anything like that. And so it's very friendly to all sorts of folks. You can take your e-bike out there. You can take your one wheel. You know, I'll admit if you got a one wheel, it might not be so fun because it's not, you know,
rough.
It's still just a grass pathway, you know, a mowed grass pathway. But in, you know, in the future, who knows how that might develop. Maybe we'll put some gravel down out there and make it a little more hard surface.
You seeing a lot of individuals head out there?
Oh my gosh, it is nonstop. As soon as the sun comes up, we've got people coming out there all the way till the sun goes down. It's wonderful to see. It's amazing. You know, and it's not just the off-leash dog trail. You know, those trails lead us to all of the awesome things that we're working on. And it's an example of how we're doing recreation in tandem with conservation of, you know, of agriculture in the area. And then we've got history as well. We've got a short spur off the trail that goes over to where the streetcar now sits. You know, that's part of the trail system. You know, grab your dog, put him on the leash, take him out there, go see what you can see and, you know, get him off leash in the off leash trail and, you know, just have a good old time. And there's interpretive signs out there to go read. There's history, all sorts of stuff.
And I mean, it really is serving as kind of the example area or the pilot area for just about everything that the Sheridan Community Land Trust efforts are put into. You can go out there and you can actually see all of it working in tandem, that's one thing that I really do appreciate about the Big Goose Natural Area is it is really serving as an example of what can be done in other areas. On that, I'm getting a signal. He's about to throw something at me. I better take a quick commercial break. More with Sheridan Community Land Trust when we return. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Remember when your mom used to say, "Don't break your arm, patting yourself on the back"? Well, if you ignored her and broke your arm, then the Health Nut is the place for you to get all healthy again. Every inch of the Health Nut can make you feel better about yourself. The soup, sandwich, and salad bar, and smoothie so good you'll forget you even got a broke arm. Remember how your mom used to say you'd forget your head if it wasn't glued on? Well, we can't fix that, but most everything else at the Health Nut in Sheridan's 5th Street Mall.
Looking for physical therapy options before your surgery or for your post-op? Did you know you don't have to go to Sheridan for physical therapy? Nope. Avoid that painful journey and stay in Dayton, where we have 3 physical therapists. Oh, and Active Balance Physical Therapy is a top referral from doctors, so you don't just save time. You get top-tier physical therapy. Not having surgery? Come in and let's build a prevention plan. ActiveBalancePT.com. Stop by the website and then come see us.
in Dayton.
The Pro Football Pick'em VIPs will be in studio tomorrow morning. Remember to tune in to KROE 103.9 FM or Classic Hits 105.9 FM with host Bob Grammons right after Kevin Sports at 7:40. You'll hear our VIPs, Magic Melanie Jacobs, along with Andrew the Analyst Boink from First Northern Bank, joined by Good Luck Chuck McGarrah and Jamie Armchair Aggers from Carroll's Furniture, and me, James the Bookie Timberlake. Listen in to Pro Football Pick'em tomorrow morning at about 7:40 a.m. on 103.9 or 105.9.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. And this morning we're sitting with Sheridan Community Land Trust Director of Conservation John Graves and Director of Recreation Jared Koenig. Now, John, what makes the Ridgetop, and if I'm saying this right, Gillespie.
Yep.
Gillespie, I just showed that I'm not a native, didn't I? Gillespie draw land donation. Such a significant moment for conservation here in the county.
It's going to be great. You know, Don Roberts' donation to SCLT, SCLT now through our sister organization, owns those two parcels. People might not be familiar with those names. It's where the Ridgetop Natural Area is where part of the Soldier Ridge Trail runs, and the Gillespie Draw Natural Area is where part of the Hidden Hoot Trail runs. And so we now own the land. They're also both protected under a conservation easement. And so we have a lot of great plans for that land. We are going to continue to use it for grazing of cattle through our lessee. Jared's going to continue working hard on all the trails he has out there. And then we have more plans to look at how can we improve the habitat out there for wildlife. There's a lot of pronghorn and deer out there. We want more out there. We want to improve that habitat. I know Jared has a lot of great plans to open up recreation out there as well for other ideas in the future. And we're just so excited about the possibilities we can have with that, you know. Lots of brainstorming is going on right now, so stay tuned. We'll have a lot of great ideas in the future on how the public can enjoy that space even more.
Jared, when you receive kind of the marching orders, you got a new plot of land. I'd love to see some recreation on it. What starts cooking in the oven?
Well, all of our projects take a long time to plan out, not a long time always, but a long time and a lot of steps to make sure that we're not stepping on any toes. We want to make sure that we respect our neighbors, right? We're moving into a new space. We want to make sure we definitely respect our neighbors, respect the things that they're doing out there, respect, you know, the historical intent of the area as well. You know, there is agriculture going on up there, and that's something that we are going to continue up there. And recreation will fit in with that in ways that it doesn't affect negatively that agriculture. You know, I know people are really excited about the possibility of new things. Sometimes that has to be tempered with making sure that we're still able to keep historical things, you know, historical preservation as well as agricultural preservation. And so, you know, we're going to be looking at a lot of different options for possible trails, temporary short-term open areas for different things. You know, say one of the things that we've been interested in and brainstorming in is a sledding area. And say, like, in town, where can you go? Where can you take your kids within 5 minutes of town, go sledding, and, you know, not run into a fence down at the bottom of Linden Hill?
I know you saw that smile come across. When I was a little kid, boy, I had to march. And I mean, it was a march to get to a sled hill. I would love to be able to report on a whole bunch of families heading up to an area and just having a fantastic time on sleds. That's one winter activity that I don't think gets enough attention. It is so fun to do, and it's great to hear that that's in your mind, because that is a fantastic use of an area for an entire family. And I would love it, you know, if there was a good, safe area that someone actually took care of where families could go and just sled and have fun for a day. Grab a thermos of hot chocolate and head out there. I've just got a lot of great memories doing that stuff. You said it does take time. There is planning stage. There's considerations that need to be met. When could we be looking at recreation in that area?
I guess just to start off with, now that we do own that area, we do want people to know it's not a free-for-all. We still want people to stay on trail. And there's a lot of reasons to stay on trail. One of the primary ones is that because somebody is leasing that area to do agriculture with cattle, we want to respect their use of that space. And help maintain the validity of that up on that space, right? So, when we talk about, say, like Sledding Hill, that, unfortunately, we're waiting on the snow. If we had enough snow, I'd be up there sledding right now,
yeah.
I tell you what. So that may be here within a few weeks, a couple of months, just depending on the amount of snow that we get. And, it's just the right timing. And also, it's also ideas. We don't come up with the ideas on our own. It's the public. And we want ideas from the public. What do you need? And like a sledding hill, people told us they want a sledding hill. Off-leash dog trails, they want off-leash dog trails, right? These are the things that people tell us. And this is what we're trying to accomplish. And so, and that's why we if all the public that goes out there, they follow the rules that we try to put in place for these areas, it'll help, more possibilities will blossom, and as long as we manage it properly. And that's just what we're trying to do, is manage it properly for the community.
Fantastic. All right, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show this morning. I'm going to let you guys go and bring two other individuals from the Sheridan Community Land Trust in. Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, more with SCLT when we come back. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
Doug, my car got a little scratch.
Define little.
It's noticeable.
Bobby, you can see it from the street. It's noticeable.
Good news is, though, the Waring Chevrolet Body Shop fixes everything. Scratches, dents, big jobs, small jobs, the whole works.
That's why we're here. We have a team of skilled techs, quality repairs, and we'll do it right.
Probably can't fix my driving, huh?
We're not that good, Bob. Folks, bring your vehicle to the Waring Chevrolet Body Shop. We'll get you right in, take good care of you. Waring Chevrolet, 107 East Alger, or online at waringsheridan.com.
Hi, this is Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's. When you walk through our doors, you feel it. The perfect mix of style, warmth, and confidence. And that's no accident. It's our team, polished, friendly, and ready to make your night special. From the greetings to the goodbye, we care about your experience as much as your meal. Sheridan's favorite place to connect, celebrate, and unwind. Frackleton's, where great food meets flawless service. Main Street in downtown Sheridan.
Welcome in 2026 with a bang with Whizbang Fireworks. Whizbang is a great selection of fireworks in all varieties. You can start the new year off with a fireworks celebration. Whizbang Fireworks will be open Saturday, December 27th through Wednesday, December 31st from noon to 4 p.m. on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut. Use caution with fireworks and follow local laws. Celebrate 2026 with fireworks from Whizbang Fireworks, open on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut.
The following message is presented by First Federal Bank and Trust, online at efirstfederal.bank.
Hungry at lunchtime? Then come to lunch together every weekday from 12 to 12:45. Enjoy a home-cooked meal absolutely free. Just neighbors, good food, and a warm welcome. Whether you're short on funds, short on groceries, or just for a meal with friends, Lunch Together is for you. Join us at the First Congregational Church, 100 West Worth. It's right across from the old First Interstate drive-thru.
If you haven't signed up for the Sheridan Media Newsletter, well, now's the time. You'll find some of the top news stories of the week, community events, local
sports, weather, as well as the latest movies from Centennial Theater. What's happening at the Wild Theater? Discover fun facts, local photos and videos shared in history, country bounty links, as well as links to some of your favorite businesses and promotions. It's emailed every Thursday morning. If you don't get the newsletter, you're missing out. Click on the Sheridan Media newsletter button that's on the front of our website at SheridanMedia.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends at their First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whining. We've changed seats, but I'm still speaking with Sheridan Community Land Trust. Now I've got the History Program Manager, Kevin Knapp, and the Executive Director, Brad Bauer. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Great.
Yeah. How are you, Floyd? That was pretty good. You guys owe each other a coat. Kevin, it's the big one. Yeah, you're taking your big breath. As you said, kind of all-consuming. Tell me what it took logistically to move that car.
Oh, man. I mean, first of all, it took months and months of brainstorming with every person I could think of because we wanted to do it right. We needed to – you only get one chance.
Right.
And so it really was just months of looking at it and drawing things. All of us took turns sketching all kinds of different ideas and then soliciting bids. It became clear that we were going to need a crane. We were trying to be creative and cheap. And in the end, there was no way to do it with forklifts and all these other various lift ideas that we came up with. We needed a crane and a flatbed, which is how it's I've been moved basically every time it's been moved around this community. We had to, All Valley Diesel is the one that we went with. They were amazing. I would recommend All Valley Diesel as a responsible, talented crew. They came in with a bid that I thought was really, it showed a care for the fragile historic nature of the car. And they had to kind of rebuild the entire understructure so that the weight could be distributed by the two cranes that they would use on each side and not actually be putting stress on the historic wooden beams and all of that. It took a whole day of prep, a couple of days of welding, actually, and then a whole day of prep and then a whole day to move it, to just do every little moment correctly to get it balanced and lifted by one crane on each side, and a giant flatbed truck backed up underneath it, then lowered down and secured to the truck, and then driven down Main Street and out Laux and Big Goose and parked at our property.
Holy cow, man.
Yeah.
You know, in another lifetime, I was a crane operator.
Okay.
So I can tell you right now that that's a talented crew.
Yes.
Having in tandem, working together, two individuals, whoever was in that operator's box, they really good team there.
Yep.
Because you could, I'm not going to go into the things that could have happened. In case we're still got our fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. For those who may not know what we're talking about, mm-hmm. What is the car?
Okay, so the streetcar is one of eight, I believe. There was a fleet for the Sheridan Railway Company. They were launched in 1911, and this was the heyday of development in Sheridan, mostly spurred by the railroad and the mining communities of, you know, Acme, Dietz, Monarch, up in the northern part of the county. During 1905 to 1915, this town became what it is, you know, from a tiny village to having paved streets and electricity and irrigation.
Very cosmopolitan. Right?
It really was. It's real interesting to read the news reporting from that time period from all across the country of how Sheridan was this shining beacon of modernity in the West. And like the Acme Power Plant was, people came from all over the Rocky Mountain region to see that. And so the streetcars were just a part of all of that. It was it was common. It was a piece of transportation history that was what was happening all over the country. And they were funded by the coal interests of the coal companies because they wanted miners to be able to get to town, have send their kids to school in town. So the interurban car, which is like the size of a railway car, like a regular railroad car, those don't exist anymore. This is the only one left of the eight that they had. Only one left in the state of Wyoming, as far as anyone can tell. Because, like I say, it was common. Cheyenne had trolleys. Lots of municipalities did, but they've all just gone to the wayside. This one, there's some photos of it that you can see on our website. When it was originally discovered in a field in 1976, so 50 years after it had been retired, somebody had been living in it. It had been a chicken coop. Some of the other ones I've heard, that's what's cool about this. I go out and I talk to the community and teach about it, and then people come up to me and I get more information every time. And so some people have said that, oh, my son, he has some property and they used one of those old streetcars as a bridge. And it's still out there.
What a versatile piece of equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the thing with the streetcar is that between 1911 and 1926, we had a fleet of these things that would take you back and forth to the mining communities all around town. The fort, there was a major trestle across Hume Draw, which was called Dead Man's Gulch at the time. And got some volunteers doing a lot of work to relocate a lot of the infrastructure from that. And then it was retired in 1926. That was 100 years ago. And the restoration that took place in 1976 was beautiful, but it just was set right back out in the weather. And so we need to restore the restoration and then protect it. Well, otherwise, what's the point of putting so much work into it?
Absolutely. So when it comes to the restoration and protection, mm-hmm. what's our next move?
So this is the innovation, I guess. This is the first time that's someone is going to shelter it from the elements. We're going to build a brand new construction over the streetcar that has a lot of considerations. It's kind of like that undercarriage stuff I was talking about. We've spent there's been many iterations of what the building's going to be. And I've always tried to be like with the crane. I start out conservative and eventually after talking to my team and talking to the construction company, Cleary Buildings, that's going to work with us, it just kept expanding and having new versatility. Basically we have a bus barn out in our property at Big Goose Natural Area. Originally, that bus barn was the plan. We were going to shove it in a stall in there, but that became not a good idea. As a crane operator, you can understand how it might be hard to get something inside a garage door with a crane. So the only other option was to expand the bus barn, to put the trolley down and then build around it, basically. So there's going to be a whole extension to the bus barn that's, 18, 19 feet tall, 30 feet long. And it's basically like a large hay barn type structure. So the most of the sides are open so people can still see it when they come out there. But the weather isn't getting on it from the top, and we can close it up if we need to. And it lets light in, and it has enough room around it that people can get on ladders and fix the roof. And, because we need it to be displayed and appreciated, but we also need to be able to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So that comes in February. It's a strange time to be building, I know, but that's what we've been locked into with a good contract with Cleary, that in early February, we'll start constructing that.
If you were to estimate a time period when families can head on out there, mm-hmm. take a good look at it, kind of walk around, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. ask questions, when sure. would that be?
Well, I mean, we invite people out to the Big Goose Natural Area anytime during daylight hours. This spring, even, you'll be able to see that new building over it. And so I'd encourage people, as any time that you feel like you want to enjoy the weather out at BGNA, come and take a look at it.
Hey, you can go out there now.
Yeah.
It's Kevin and Jared, who you talked to before, mowed a trail in. So there's just a short little spur trail from the parking lot in front of our office at Big Goose Natural Area. And go take a look at it.
Yeah. So that's the idea. We're not hiding it away from anybody. It's a public asset, a historic resource. But things will happen fast. We're not promising full restoration on any timeline. But by spring, you'll see a building over it. November of 1926 was when it was retired. November of 1976 is when it was fully restored the first time. So November of 2026, we're definitely going to be doing something out there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll celebrate it and invite everybody out. I can't say how much work will have been done on it yet.
But there is going to be a lot of work done on it.
Yeah. And that's probably more like a 3 to 5 year process before we can really say we've made a lot of progress on the restoration, because it's a lot of little bits at a time, volunteer work, donated supplies, just kind of a labor of love and take it as it comes.
Now, you are the director of one of the most popular programs out at SCLT. As we look back at the 2025 year, a lot of great explore histories have taken place. Mm. I'm not going to ask you to pick a favorite kid, but I am going to say, with all of these activities and everything happening, yeah. I mean, it almost feels like, you know, are we covering everything? Is there still just a lot of stuff that we have to go over?
Yeah, that's a good question. People love hearing about things they know a little bit about. So there's some topics that will just always be popular. But I am more interested myself in digging out those weird things that no one has thought about in a long time, or that somebody calls to my attention after I've presented on one topic and a community member comes up and goes, well, you know, and all of a sudden I'm down another rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it feels almost endless, the different rabbit holes you can
almost
explore.
Organic.
Yeah.
You go in there to present one thing and all of a sudden four branches grow out before the program's even done.
Yeah. And we really are the heart of a lot of iconic Western history. We don't have to stretch to find some of the most fascinating history.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the history around here. That's what kind of brought me up here in the first place. The first time I visited here was out at the fort, and I didn't even know all of that existed. I had no idea what the Bozeman Trail was before I visited here. I was well into my 20s. Yeah. Oh, shamefully, Brad. Shamefully old by the time I learned all that. Now, Brad, as you look back, and I'm kind of getting off the topics here, but, you know, 2025, big year for SCLT. You guys added the Big Goose Natural Area. You got the streetcar. Your history program's doing great. The conservation's doing great. As the executive director, tell me, in your opinion, proudest moment you think for the organization throughout this year?
I think seeing how successful the Big Goose Natural Area has been, how enjoyed it has become. You know, we put a lot of planning into buying that property, putting our office out there, and taking that opportunity to have a new space to work in. And then our team is very good at coming up with ideas. Or those rabbit holes that you were talking about, finding rabbit holes. And so we tried to put as many rabbit holes as we could on this property, as many angles of the organization's work on this property. And we weren't seeing a lot of use. You know, we had wildlife-friendly fence out there. We were starting this virtual fencing that maybe you talked about before. The streetcar history, recreation was out there. But we weren't seeing a lot of community members coming out and participating in the property, which was, you know, kind of hard, I guess, after we put so much thought into it.
A little disheartening.
Yeah, a little bit. But I don't know, about 3 months ago, 4 months ago now, at a team meeting, we were talking about, well, we kind of have the flow of the property now, the day-to-day management. Can we add another variable to it? And we did, which was allowing a dog off-leash, a pet off-leash trail. And boy, that changed almost overnight how much people were using the property.
Really?
And so, you know, we left today. Kevin and I came out here today. You know, it's a wintry morning, middle of the week, and there was 3 cars out there, people out there walking. I don't have numbers yet for how many people are out there, but there's always somebody there, dusk to dawn, or dawn to dusk hours. And which that's been what really, I think, for me, you know, to have something that is reaching more community members, new community members, just right outside the front door. I think that is great. It feels good. it's got to feel good for the team too, to see that, you know, all that they're thinking is the Big Goose Natural Air has been sort of extra. You know, Kevin's doing his successful history programs and continues to do his successful history programs, but didn't need a natural area to do that. He was already succeeding and achieving his mission. And same with the other two mission areas, conservation and recreation. So it was extra that the team took on. So it's been rewarding for them, I hope. Definitely rewarding for me to see that and extra is impactful, you know, and is creating new friends, new community members, supporters, new challenges too.
Yeah,
for certain. But those are great. Like those, we learn from those challenges and we apply those lessons elsewhere in our work. You know, of recent, we opened up two other natural areas, the Ridgetop Natural Area and the Gillespie Draw Natural Area, which are around Kendrick Golf Course and Soldier Ridge Trail. And we'll take it slow with those. We don't know quite where we're going with opportunities out there on those two properties, but the lessons that we're learning in our front door at the Big Goose Natural Area will certainly be help us guide that path for those properties.
And it's got to be nice. I talked to John and Jared about having that, I guess you could call it like a sample or an experimentation area right outside where you could be like, is this something I want to kind of present to the public? Well, let's see how it operates out here first. We'll give it X amount of months and then we'll go approach the public about it. That's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a scientist by training, so I think there's probably a little bit of that learn by experimenting that appeals to that aspect of my personality. And, you know, not just learning from how the public uses the property, but also use the property to learn how we can manage the property from, you know, putting in this virtual fencing, from putting in wildlife-friendly fencing, from putting in boater-friendly fence stream crossings. We're trying to use that property as much as we can to experiment and to learn how we can be better stewards of lands, but also better stewards of community opportunities for our public to enjoy, places that they can, you know, make memories on a Christmas day. I got a photo from a community member Christmas day of the streetcar out at the Big Goose Natural Area with a beautiful sunset behind it. And I was like, that's awesome.
That's
now somebody's Christmas memory of what they did 2025 with their kids and their daughter, or their kids and their wife, you know, and it's like, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were able to create that, you know.
Brad, I've run out of time with you, but I think if you give me the real quick 1 minute spiel about 2026, what are we looking forward to as CLT?
Well, before we get to 2026, we have a fundraising opportunity right now. $65,000 challenge match out there that runs through the middle of January. So any contribution from community members will be matched. Any increased contributions will be triple matched as well. So if you're already a monthly supporter, which we thank you, but you decide to make increase that, they'll have, you know, you'll get $3 for the dollar that you contribute to us. I think what I'm looking forward to next year is these rabbit paths that we talked about. We have great 5-year strategic plan, 25-year vision for the organization, but you never know the opportunity until it shows itself, and being open to that opportunity. We're not going to change the mission of the organization. We're still going to do the core work, but if we can find ways to be even more relevant to the community, awesome.
All the better. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in this morning. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm glad we were able to organize this where I could sit everybody down, and happy new year.
Yeah. Thanks Floyd, you too. Floyd. Yeah, appreciate it.
You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Here's what makes First Federal Bank and Trust different.
No shareholders, just shared values and profits that are reinvested locally, supporting nonprofits to help our community thrive.
Mutual means more for our communities.
With years of trusted local service and modern banking tools that make life easier, mutual means more.
First Federal Bank and Trust, banking with shared values. Member FDIC.